Hey, this is Tom Cundert from Portugal.net and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o golo, Figo, e a bola é gol! O golo da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, Rui Costa já acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo! 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 Golo!
Champions realize that defeat and learning from it, even more than winning, is part of the path to mastery. This is episode number 24 of the Seleção Podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. As you know what, it's never a good time to come and do a show after a loss. And as badly as we wanted that win in Serbia to control our own destiny in winning Group B, it was not to be, and now we shift our focus to the next two matches next month in November as the Seleção try to qualify as the second place team in Group B with a home match against Lithuania and an away match to end Euro 2020 qualifying in Luxembourg. We are pleased to have Eric Vieira joining us, the Portuguese Hammer. He's going to give us his thoughts on the show or on the matches this past week. But before we get him on, just remember to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/SeleçãoPod. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at SeleçãoPod. Shoot us an email, SeleçãoPod@gmail.com. Of course, check us out on SeleçãoPod.com. And of course, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any platform, any podcast platform that you have, please give us a 5-star review or a 5-star rating and just a one or two sentence review. That helps out the show tremendously. So, of course, we are a proud partner of Portugal.net. A lot of coverage, obviously, of the last two matches. But without further ado, let's bring in our guest for episode number 24, Eric the Portuguese Hammer Vieira. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at GIS Hammer. That's GIS and Hammer. Also, he is on the Galaxy, or check that Corner of the Galaxy podcast, which covers the Los Angeles Galaxy as they are preparing for a first round playoff matchup with Minnesota on the road this weekend. We'll talk to Eric a little bit about that, but you can follow the Galaxy podcast at Galaxy Podcast, and you can follow Eric's Instagram account, which is just honestly, it's hilarious, it's informative, and it gives you a little bit of an insight as to what the fun side of football and fun side of soccer is. Follow him on Instagram at Galaxy Profoul. That's Galaxy Profoul. Is that enough plugs for you, Vieira?
I was going to say, I think you've got all the plugs out of the way. I don't even need to come on. I'm good to go. So
Eric,
thank you for the glowing entrance. Appreciate that, Danny.
Hey, Eric, what's your social security number?
you know, I have LifeLock, so I'm going to share that. You know, I feel secure.
I know, buddy.
But yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You talked about, you know, it's tough to have a good podcast after a loss, but as someone who covers the Los Angeles Galaxy, you have the right guy to come on after a loss. I have a lot of experience with podcasting after a loss.
Well, there you go. And we'll get into the Galaxy stuff at the end here, but first off, again, thanks for coming on. It's always good to have you on. And obviously, Eric, the initial reaction and the closest reaction from the two matches here is that loss in Ukraine. Obviously, the chances of Portugal winning the group are now dashed. Ukraine have won the group with 19 points currently. Portugal can do no better than 17 with two wins in these last two games, but they do control their destiny in terms of finishing in second and qualifying for Euro 2020. So it's obviously the not the result we wanted in the Ukraine game. But what did you think of the overall performance that the Seleção gave in Kiev?
Yeah, that's kind of the funny thing when you think about this game is, you know, you walk away with a loss. Chance to win the group, that is dashed, and you want to walk away disappointed. But when you really sit back and look at it, there was a set piece goal that was put in off a rebound. You know, Gurayev got caught napping, and basically that's the difference. The Ukrainian keeper, Pyatov, he had a great match. The defense was organized. The Ukraine defense didn't really give Portugal easy chances. You know, they were physical. You know, I felt like they out-physicaled Portugal there, and they just made it very difficult on Portugal on the night. And you know, I want to give credit to the Ukraine because it seems like they came out ready for that game and they really frustrated Portugal. But when you look at the stats, you know, Portugal didn't really do anything very different than what they did against Luxembourg. The goals were there to be had. It's just unfortunate they weren't as efficient as the Ukraine when it came to putting away their chances.
Yeah, goals by Roman Yaremchuk, excuse me, in the 6th minute, and then Andrei Yarmolenko in the 27th put the Slezsaun down 2-0 midway through, I should say, the first half. But Portugal did get back in with a goal in the second half, albeit by a penalty. One, a controversial penalty, in my opinion, an even more controversial second yellow to give Stepanenko his red card. But like you mentioned, there were chances to be had. I mean, you just the last 2-3 minutes where Pep has a chance after the ball was played by Ronaldo to get it right into the right side of the corner, but the angle was obviously just impossible for him to put in. And then just that strike by Daniel Pereira that hit the I don't know if it hit the crossbar or if it hit the post, but it hit almost right in the sweet spot of the corner there.
And yeah, it hit all of it. Yeah, yeah, he hit all of the ball and it hit all of the posts. Strike.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent of the strike that he had against Serbia to get the draw in the second match of qualifying. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the stats and you know, and it won't be all doom and gloom here because I want to give a little bit of a review of the Luxembourg game because I guess I could just do that right now. In my opinion, I never felt for 1 second of that game that Portugal wasn't in control of the Luxembourg game. You then get the goal, the early goal by Bernard Silva, the second half goals by Ronaldo and Gonçalo Guedes. And again, it's one of those things where the chances were there. There were multiple calls for possible penalties. Obviously, that was a much better flowing performance, for a lack of better term, by the Slezsaun, and that got us the guaranteed 3 points, the 3-0 victory, and it could have been much, much more. In a similar fashion, when you put as many shots on goal as Portugal did against Ukraine, and I believe the stats were 24 total shots, 10 on goal, a possession advantage of 59-41. Whereas Ukraine has only 5 or 4 shots on goal, obviously 2 of them go in. It's not about the. It then becomes, the matter of the quality of the chances and converting instead of just having the chances. And it was very similar to me to the first Ukraine match where I believe they had 18 corners and converted none of them. They had 9 corners in this game, and it just. I don't know, Eric. For me, as sure as I was in the Luxembourg game. Throughout the entire match, as soon as that first goal hit for Ukraine at 1-0 with still about 85 minutes left to go, I never felt sure and I never felt okay watching the Slezsaun play against Ukraine. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at the shots on goal, they actually had more shots total in the Ukraine game than they had in the Luxembourg game, which is interesting. They had the same amount of shots on goal. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about that, you know, it's a bit frustrating, but also when you look at the opportunities the Ukraine had, they had one corner and they were able to get a goal off of that. And it seemed like their chances were simple. And that's why I want to give credit to the Ukraine because the Portugal chances were not simple. They had to really work to get hard to get those shots and make things happen. So I understand the frustration there. As far as, you know, the game not being in doubt in Luxembourg, you know, with all respect to Luxembourg, they really didn't have any business in that game. They did well to kind of fight and try to counter. But again, I agree with you that there's absolutely no doubt that Portugal were just eventually going to put their chances away and walk away with 3 points. But with the early goal, when you go to the Ukraine, you're on away turf. The stadium atmosphere is rocking. And if you believe that means anything, you know, having spoken with a few players saying that when you're at home and you have that crowd behind you that sometimes that can inspire you. And I think once you get an early goal down, it made me a little bit nervous. And so a running gag that I have over on Corner of the Galaxy is don't peak too soon. So, you know, when you score a goal in the fifth or sixth minute, you know there's plenty of time and there's plenty of talent on this Portugal side for them to give them a game. So that's why the second goal for me, I thought was killer. And, you know, I thought, well, this is two goals down, you're away. They're probably not going to fight back for this one. But the surprising thing is they did fight back in the second half when, you know, the introduction of João Félix, you know, and was seemed like the right move. And he kind of brought that energy, brought that intensity. And then once they got the goal back and again on that penalty, and I agree with you about it being controversial. I think the red card was a bit harsh for that. I mean, obviously it did touch an arm and I think a penalty was fair, but the red card was a bit much. So once they get that goal, you think, well, the last, you know, 20, 25 minutes, they're going to get that equalizer. And so it just never ended up coming. But, you know, I want to give Portugal credit for fighting back even two goals down. You know, I started to believe after that first goal that, okay, they're going to squeeze something out of this. It just never came.
Yeah. We're talking with Eric Vieira, the Portuguese Hammer, here on episode number 24 of the Seleção podcast, as we are reviewing the qualifiers against Luxembourg and Ukraine, obviously focusing more on the Ukraine because it's the negative, and that's what Portuguese people do, right, Eric?
I was going to say, I have an avó, so I could relate, yeah.
obviously, the lineup prior to the match was I want to say controversy, but just there was a lot there in that starting 11 that Fernando Sanches had produced for the Ukraine game, where there's just a lot of people just scratching their heads and wondering what in the hell João Mário has done in training camp and in his time in Russia. And while he's having a good season over at Lokomotiv Moscow, to me, he didn't earn a start specifically over a guy like Bruno Fernandes, who I think, while he hasn't hit the scoring that he's been doing at Sporting with the Seleção, I thought primarily in the second half in Luxembourg, really thought he was very positive, getting some really good shots on goal. Thought he would be a shoe-in for the starting 11, yet João Mário gets the start. Let's talk about Fernando Sanches' decision with that starting lineup. How much of the blame, obviously now in retrospect with the result, how much of the blame of this loss falls at the shoes and at the feet of Umister?
I think if you go and you say, well, is this on the manager? Is this on the players? I think this one, the blame does fall on Fernando Sanches. You know, with that being said, I'm not in the camp that he needs to be sacked or that he's a national embarrassment. I'll save that for Greg Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team. That's where I'll save that energy to go.
Yeah, shout out to our buddy Jimmy Enns.
Yeah, Berhalter's out.
Yes, sir.
But I think he got the squad wrong, and they were literally playing from behind once they had the right personnel in the game. João Félix, I think my criticism of him when the national team, I feel like he's trying a bit too much. He wants that goal, and he's almost, you know, in his own head and, you know, not playing simple. You know, it's sure. Sometimes when you make the game simple, that's when the magic happens. And I think he's maybe trying a little bit too much. But with his omission from the starting lineup, I think you saw that João Mário lacked that intensity and that need to make things happen. And that's something that Bruno Fernandes brings as well. So I think they were lacking you know, that creativity and that spark, that energy. And once they got those players on the field, that's when Portugal really, you know, looked like the goals were going to start falling in. So I think the blame does fall on Fernando Sanches here. I think he got it wrong. If he, you know, starts João Félix, starts Fernandes, I think we may be talking about a different thing. But then again, it was the defensive lapses, you know, is what caused those goals. So does having a João Félix and a Bruno Fernandes change that? You know, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback and look back and say it could have been different. But I think they did lack a little bit of the intensity that those two players bring.
You know, and we're all do a bad day at our job every once in a while. But guys like you and I, Eric, if we have a bad day, tomorrow is the next day and we get back in. Whereas a manager, especially an international manager in qualification, you have a bad day, it could be, you know, it could be lights out for you. I am in that camp with you. There is no reason for anyone to think that Fernando Sanches needs to lose his job at the moment. But he got it wrong, like you mentioned. By the way, I don't think you can fire anyone or let's say, I'm sure you can, but there's no reason to fire somebody who, in his 26th European match as manager of Portugal, received his first loss.
Yeah, that's what, that was an amazing stat when I heard on the broadcast when they're saying, you know, first loss and I think in official competition, actual competitive play. So I thought that that was an impressive stat. So, you know, if that your first loss in competitive play gets you fired, then, you know, what does that say about
it's a tough gig,
about
man.
The expectations?
That's,
yeah,
that's tough. That's a tough gig if you know, you get one loss, bro. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only other thing that I'll add is, you know, needing a goal. I'm a Andre Silva guy, and you know, he got the call up. You know, he was out of favor for a little bit, but I think if you need a goal, you're down a goal. You know, they brought Bruma in at the end, but to me, Andre Silva is a guy who seems to have that knack for getting a goal. So to me, I would have liked to have seen him in one of the matches. So that was another omission. I know he's not everyone's favorite player, but that's a player I would have liked to have seen in that situation.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing him. I actually, with the substitutions, it was Bruma in for João Mário, I believe. You know, João Félix, obviously, at the beginning of the second half.
And Bruma did well. He made things happen as well.
Yeah, and you know, so Andres Silva, you know, could he have done something? Sure, anyone could have done something. It's better than doing nothing, like the left back that we have. Which,
yeah,
I'm sorry, you know,
here we go.
Listen, it's not his fault that this team lost. It's not 100% on him, but there is something about Rafael Guerreiro since the 2016 Euro, which, in my opinion, you can argue that he was the second best player on the Portuguese squad in the 2016 Euro behind Ronaldo. His importance and his ability in that tournament, I will always be indebted to him. With that said, it has been a rough road for him since. He's not been in form he wasn't in form in 2018 at the World Cup. He just does not seem to be the same player that he was in 2016 when he puts on the Seleção shirt. And quite frankly, I would not mind them sitting him for these next qualifiers if this quartet is healthy. I think he deserves a call up because I just haven't seen enough of Mário Rui to tell me that yeah, he deserves to at least have a shot at left back. In the last episode before in previewing these matches, give me the quartet of Guerreiro, João Cancelo, Ricky P, Ricardo Pereira, and Nelson Smith, and you can interchange Nelson Smith and João Cancelo on that left if you're having issues with Rafael Guerreiro. And Rafael Guerreiro is playing his trade at Borussia Dortmund. He's not playing left back a lot. He's playing on the wing, and he's playing more of attacking. So maybe you could still find a way to get him doing that in the Seleção colors. But he's had a rough go over the last couple of years for the Seleção.
Yeah, and I think you made the point that I had in my head as well, is when he's playing for Borussia Dortmund, he's not playing left back. And so when you see him caught napping there, it almost feels like he kind of maybe drifted into that more attacking mentality, not realizing that he, you know, needs to track back with that last man there. So again, obviously we can sit on our couches and say how easy, you know, you could have fixed it. but again, I agree that he's having a tough time. A player that you mentioned, Nelson Smith, I thought he had a great two games, and he really showed that he can lock down that right spot. That spot could very much be his moving forward.
Yeah, and on the right side, there's plenty of talent there. It's the left side right now, like a natural left fullback, where the Seleção right now does not have, in my opinion, a clear-cut number one, given the struggles that Rafael Guerreiro has had, especially in the Ukraine game, and obviously Mário Rui being an inexperienced Seleção team selection. But I would not mind having guys who are interchangeable, like Nelson Smith and João Cancelo, you know, go to the left, see how they do, and give them the opportunity. Honestly, the level of competition in these next two games against Lithuania and Luxembourg are not the top. There should be 6 points, and there should be qualification for Euro 2020 without using the dreaded word of playoff. But I think these would be two matches specifically where maybe you don't have Guerreiro. Maybe you have, you know, Nelson Smith play on the left and you bring Ricardo Pereira on the right. Maybe you have João Cancelo play on the left if he gets more minutes at Man City, and have Nelson Smith or Ricardo Pereira play on the right. There's still depth, and there's still enough depth in the back for them to tinker a little bit if they have to, without having to go ahead and play Rafael Guerreiro every single time.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think with the games being against Lithuania and Luxembourg, there's still enough time to where those can essentially be auditions. If you're looking for a replacement for Guerreiro, because I think part of why Santos probably started him is because of the experience. He's played in the Euro. He's played in the World Cup. So this being a big game, I can see the need or the want of putting Guerreiro in that situation. So this could be, you know, an opportunity moving forward to look for that possible replacement. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, we're talking with Eric Vieira, the Portuguese Hammer, here on episode number 24 of the Seleção Podcast, as we are reviewing the matchups against Luxembourg and Ukraine. Obviously, as I mentioned, the focus obviously with Ukraine and the Seleção moving forward here. We talk about the defense. Talking with you prior to flipping on the microphone here, we had talked about a little bit of the central defending with our center backs. I thought Ruben Dias had his maybe not bad game, but I would say poor, and that's I think maybe even being a little harsh, but not at his best there. But the man obviously that we were focusing on, not so much for his performance overall, was Pep, but just because you and I are of the agreement that while we have been talking about the eventual replacement and retirement of Pep, who has been just an absolute unbelievable player for this Seleção for now a decade. There has been talk for the last couple of years. When is Pep going to stop playing? When is he going to be replaced? And you know, to his credit, his performances have not gone down in terms of quality that much. But there were glimpses against Ukraine, weren't there?
Yeah, I think there's the old saying. You know, you're never older than you are right now. So I've never seen Pep look older, and it started to show. He's been just absolutely solid, a stellar center back, someone that we've counted on for years. And that Ukraine match was probably the first time that I've looked on. Maybe he's losing a little bit of that step. And I say that he made a goal-saving tackle, I felt, towards the end of the game as well. But he also slipped up on one and let one creak by. So you're starting to see some of those flashes, and I believe we're close enough to the Euro that he's still going to be our starting back next summer. And again, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about the qualifying, but I think he's still going to be that fixture. But we are starting to see that transition into not the sharp Pep that we've seen in years past. And so it's a sad thing to see, but Mother Time, she's undefeated. So, you know, eventually it's going to happen. I think we're just starting to see the first glimpses of that with our center back, Pep.
I've never heard of Mother Time. I've heard of Father Time. I've heard of Mother Nature. What if it's really, what if it's really Father Nature and Mother Time?
You know, I'm in Southern California. I'm very progressive. So, you know, the future is female. I'm not going to admit that I made a mistake there. I'm just going to say I'm going to cover that up with that.
That's why you have a jerk of a host who definitely got it there for you. So, in terms of moving it up to the midfield now, obviously the big hole that was there, not so much in – because I actually thought Danilo played decent. Obviously, again, everyone played better in Luxembourg, and obviously the quality of opponent will dictate that. But William Goodwill not being in the starting lineup in either of these matches, especially in that Ukraine match, I thought that's where you really felt his absence. And the Seleção is going to be feeling his absence for a little bit more, especially with these next two matches. As it was announced at the time of this recording, it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. He's going to be out for at least 3 months. And that means he's out for Lithuania. He's out for Luxembourg next month after having a surgery for a herniated disc. So, and let me pronounce that again, for a herniated disc.
My again, goodness. We've all seen that clip go wrong. Yeah. So,
but yeah,
so speaking of mother and father time, herniated discs, you know, that's something for the older crowd as well.
No. What are you saying? That he's not going to play anymore? Are you saying William Carvalho's career is over, Eric?
I'm just saying.
Are you breaking news that we don't want?
I am. That was something unique, I thought, to a national team camp. We usually don't report on injuries. If a player is injured, they don't get the call. So I thought that was interesting that he did get the call. Unfortunately, he just wasn't able to contribute with the injuries.
Yeah, and that sometimes is one of those things between clubs and national teams where it's either something isn't disclosed or the national team maybe does not care and wants to maybe kind of force the issue a little bit. But obviously he didn't make the games, was not chosen. Andre Gomes actually replaced him on the roster. Andre Gomes did not play in either of the matches. But, yeah, he is out for the next 3 months after having surgery, successful surgery, so that's good. With a herniated disc, surgery there. But the midfield for me, and I don't know if it's just a matter of the quality of opponent, Luxembourg versus Ukraine, but when the initial starting 11 for the Luxembourg match, because he was out, William Carvalho was out, when they inserted João Moutinho into that midfield, and then you had a midfield of Bruno Fernandes, João Moutinho and Danilo, as much as I've not minded and actually liked the two defensive mid approach that Fernando Sanchez had in these last few matches, I thought that even though João Moutinho is not an overwhelmingly offensive player in terms of, you know, scoring goals or dishing out assist after assist, he's just a solid box to box midfielder. I thought it brought a lot of balance to that starting 11. And when I saw his name again for the Ukraine match, I thought, all right, let's see what happens again. But for me, with Moutinho, is 4 days and traveling, is that good for a guy who's, you know, he's not super old, but he's now past 30. He's 31, 32. Do you think that's maybe asking too much of him to go back-to-back in 4 days?
I don't know if it's asking too much. I mean, this is something that these players, you know, as professional athletes, the expectation is that they perform at a high level. But I do agree that, you know, he is a glue guy, you know, someone who holds it all together and really, you know, he's not going to necessarily set the stat sheet on fire, but he's going to, you know, do those little things and make those little touches and put himself in position to make those around him successful. So I don't think it was asking too much of him. Obviously, looking back, maybe other moves could have been made. When you have, you know, a Bruno Fernandes in there who maybe pushes the game a little bit more, I think that maybe adds to it. You know, pairing him with João Mário, who maybe didn't bring that same ability to be dynamic, I think that could affect how Moutinho plays as well, because then maybe that's the factor where you're asking too much of Moutinho, is who you're pairing him with, because then it's asking more of him.
We're talking with Eric Vieira of the Corner of the Galaxy podcast. You can find Eric here on Twitter and all of his social medias here. Let's do this one more time, Eric.
I was going to say, you could just, you know, go to minute one, you'll hear it all.
No, we'll go to minute. We'll go to minute, whatever this is. At GIS Hammer, at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter. Go to Instagram, at Galaxy Profile. And, of course, visit cornerofthegalaxy.com, especially the shop, because he's got some cool stickers that we will talk about here towards the end here. But, if we want to get to the forwards here, I personally thought that João Félix in the Luxembourg game, and again, I can't stress enough that I know it's Luxembourg and I get it, but it was a nice combination, especially in the first half, of him playing really positive and you know, long balls and through balls, and I think it was maybe trying to Slesan was trying to get him involved early and kind of get those, as you mentioned, kind of like get those nerves out of his system. And, you know, he almost had that goal where he brought it down beautifully on his on his left foot and then fired it just past the right side of the post. But I thought he played well in the first half, kind of, you know, died off a little bit in the second half. And I just don't, and while the energy that he brought in the second half of Ukraine just could not get it going like he had in the Luxembourg game. But I think his time is obviously going to come. There just needs to be some patience there. Bernard Silva, I should say, I thought was brilliant in the Luxembourg game. much like everybody else on the Seleção for the most part. He had a rougher time of it in Ukraine, and while he wasn't a losing effort, what can we say about Agent 700, Cristiano Ronaldo, who notched his 700th goal in that with that penalty. Obviously, now he is the active leader in goals with 700, followed by Messi. Eric, do you by chance know who the third person is?
That'd be Mr. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, if I'm correct.
Who's that?
Again, follow at Galaxy Profal, you know, for more, and go to cornerofthegalaxy.com to read more about Zlatan.
Los Angeles Galaxy. Shameless plug. Los Angeles Galaxy legend. Is he, a quick tangent, is he the greatest player to ever play for the Galaxy?
It's a funny question that you asked that, because I think when you look at, you know, raw talent and just the world, you know, talking about a world beater, he's probably the most talented player the Los Angeles Galaxy has ever played. To call him the greatest Galaxy player, when you look back, and I know it's foolish to what I'm about to say right now.
Here it comes, folks.
But, you know, you have, you know, someone like Landon Donovan over the course of time, you know, built that legend status and was consistently contributing to the success of the club. To put him on that level above someone like Landon Donovan, clearly Zlatan is a better player than Landon Donovan.
Sure.
But over, you know, Zlatan's only been with the team for two seasons, but what he's done in those two seasons is absolutely legendary. So he's 100% a club legend. But it's a difficult thing to say he's the greatest player ever, just with the, you know, the club's been around for, 20 plus years. And there's been a lot of great players, who have contributed to the club. So I'm not going to, It's a difficult question, so I'm gonna give you a non-answer by saying he's both a great player but also not necessarily the greatest of all time for the club.
I think you answered it perfectly, because I mean, in using a basketball reference here in the States, Vince Carter is the greatest player that the Kings have ever had, but he's not the greatest Kings player of all time, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
So you're not looking back and saying, you know, look how amazing Vince Carter's time was with the Kings.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
It's amazing that one season. Oh man, 2017, 2018. All right. Anyway,
moving on. Tangent.
Moving on. Tangents. Sorry.
Back to CR 700.
Yeah, CR 700. So he can only do so much. I thought he played well in both matches. Obviously, he is obviously the straw that stirs the drink. And as long as we have him on our side, I'll take that chance against anyone. But it's a credit to him that he's gotten to 700. And honestly, there's really nothing really about the games about him to really talk about. He's just, I mean, for lack of a better term, he's just pretty awesome. Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I sent you a text. You know, I was going to come on the show and say that CR7, he's something, huh? And then that'll be that. We'll hit record and end record, and we're done.
That's it.
But when you just look at 700 goals, the amount of clubs he's done it at the national level, we already know that we're watching Portugal's greatest ever player. But it's just satisfying when you're able to sit back and say and enjoy it, you know, enjoy the ride for what it is. And watching him reach all these milestones while wearing the Seleção jersey is really special.
All right, so let's go now to the reality of the situation, which is. Portugal not winning the group. They are not going to be in pots one or two, unless and in two, they'd have to have some sort of miracle in finishing second and having three or four or even five teams losing either their last match or their last two matches. So let's go ahead and just look at, you know, pods positioning. At the end of the day, does it really matter considering how the Seleção won the Euros three years ago?
My initial thoughts after the game were it's a bummer that they lost, but in the end, with the last two games, they're still going to qualify, so it's not really that big of a deal. But when you look at it, and, you know, shout out to TugaScout.com, you know, they had an excellent breakdown of how the pots were going to break down. You realize that they're going to go up against essentially another first place team or a highly ranked second team within their group, and then possibly another first place team, depending on how it shakes out. So they're going to have to face a difficult road. But the one positive that I'd glean out of that is, you know, with the Nations League games, playing against the Netherlands, playing against Switzerland, they play well against these big teams. And so at the end of the day, if you're going to, they're going to walk away with any sort of success at Euro 2020, they're going to have to beat some big teams, even though in 2016, the brackets did us some favors. I think when you look at who they were matched up against,
just a bit.
But they did have to face, you know, a French team who was the host country and had loads of talent. And they did what, you know, we saw what, how that one ended up. So I think Europe, UEFA, these teams are top teams, the best teams in the world, and you're going to have to go through them eventually. And so if they have to do that out front and give their best games, then that's going to do nothing but help them with momentum moving forward. And if they're not up to the task and you know, calamity happens, then you could say you bowed out to some great teams. So I think we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Absolutely. And I mean, and you know, obviously, I think the World Cup is the most it's the greatest sporting event that the world has, and it comes every 4 years, and you know, the pageantry and all the different countries from South America, North America, Asia, Africa. But in terms of, I think, quality of tournament per team, I think winning the Euro is probably the most difficult in terms of international football. Just because of, you know, as you mentioned, the groups, you could have two groups of death in European competition, and we're in a World Cup, you may just have one. But you mentioned the Tuga Scout article, and Alex Gonsalves runs a great website there. Give him a follow at Tuga Scout PT. But it breaks down like this: in total, there are 10 qualifying groups. So there are 10 group winners and 10 runners-up, joined by the four winners of the Nations League path at the finals in 2020. So so 10 qualifying or 10 group winners, 10 second place teams, and then you have your four teams via the playoff. Only the six best first place teams in the qualifying group are put in pot one. The next six, which would be four first place teams, and the best two second place teams would be in pot two. The third best second place team through the eighth best second place team is in pot three.
I go, your math, I'm leaving you out to dry there. Yeah,
yeah, it's fine. Yeah, and then
your math is absolutely correct.
And then the two worst second place teams and the four playoff teams finish out pot four. I think that's correct.
And it's based on UEFA qualifying points. So it's not world rankings. And so that's why it becomes difficult, because, and they broke down all the scenarios, which I love, because it would be a miracle for Portugal to get into pot two. But basically, the countries that have enough points right now are going to end up playing each other and essentially are going to end up with those best second place spots. Portugal, even if they get 6 points additionally, are not going to have enough points to be one of those top second place teams.
Correct. Yeah. So we're looking at pot three. Obviously, again, as you mentioned, you could have a group where you have two qualifying group winners in awaiting Portugal. You could have another second place team awaiting Portugal if things go really really bad. But while I mentioned that it may not matter, obviously it does, and it's a foolish thing for me to say, but I just think that you're, I mean, obviously you want to give yourself the best opportunity in qualifying, so so you can avoid situations like this. But God, winning the Euro is such a tough task with so many great teams involved. I just think the road is going to be a harsh one, no matter what, if you're going to lift that trophy at the end of the tournament.
And it has been for years past, when you have, you know, arguably the best player in the world on your team, there's always a target on your back as well. And teams are always going to give you their best. Even if you do play, you know, a quote unquote minnow of Europe, they're going to give you everything. So there really is no easy game.
Well, Eric, let's get to some of the tweets that came into the Seleção podcast account here. And of course, you follow us at Seleção Pod on Twitter. I'm gonna go ahead and read you some tweets. This is pretty much reactions from folks who follow us and see what you think of their takes on this Ukraine game. Are you ready, sir?
Oh, I'm ready. Rapid fire. I'm built for this.
Yeah. All right. @Simba_Walker_. First of all, clever. I like Simba Walker. Who would have thought an away match to Luxembourg is now a frightening match? And it could be. Because that's the last.
That's it. That's the tweet. End tweet.
Yeah, it's end tweet. Sorry, end tweet. Yes. I mean, that's, yeah, it could. I mean, it could. That could be, unless something happens with Serbia after in the second to last game there. Yeah, that's a game that you absolutely have to win in order to get you guaranteed passage to Euro 2020.
Yeah, and it's funny how we were upset with the Ukraine and how they put us in a losing situation. But on that final match day, we're all going to be Ukraine's biggest fans, because if they beat Serbia, that essentially puts them out of the race. But I think at the end of the day, you saw talent-wise how Portugal matched up against Luxembourg. It shouldn't. And I emphasize should, because we know what happens when you say that. But I don't think it's a worry. You know, obviously everyone's down right now, but I think it should be 6 points for the last two matches.
Let's go to at Ronaldo's lawyer. Ooh, so I need some representation myself. Okay. maybe this guy's for hire for the podcast. Felix and Bruno Fernandes were far from convincing. I think that's a little harsh, just because they came in on the second half, but João Mário shouldn't have started, and Moutinho should have stayed on the pitch. I can go, yay or nay on that one. But yeah, I think the agreement there is João Mário not. I doubt we see him again unless he has is in unbelievable form in Russia next month. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're in agreement on the João Mário thing. I thought, you know, we mentioned it earlier, Felix and Fernandes, that's what they were missing, is that extra spark. Obviously, they haven't connected, and when you don't put it in the back of the net, you're always going to get criticism. But João Felix reminds me a lot of Cristiano Ronaldo of 2004, someone who had a lot of razzle-dazzle and was really impressive, but just couldn't get that first thing going. And I think he's just waiting for that moment to break through. And once he gets it, I see the talent there. He's going to be someone who's going to be able to contribute quite a bit to this team moving forward.
We go now to at Siobhan C1. That's S-I-O-B-H-A-N. C and the number one, just uncharacteristically defensively poor, which is unusual for this team, and not clinical enough around or against an organized team. Not the game for João Felix. He isn't ready. I feel bad for him, having the expectations on him, but no pace or physicality, and very lazy off the ball. I would agree with half, disagree with half, however you want to go. I personally thought that before the matches even took place, I think that Fernand Sanch also, he's in a bit of in a protective mode with him, with João Felix, just because I think a match versus Luxembourg fits João Felix's game and maybe maturity level at the Seleção, in his current Seleção career, than a match away to Ukraine, where even though he had a poor first half, I thought Gonçalo Guedes was going to get that start just because of the physicality. He's a much stronger player than João Felix, and he's been playing actually pretty well for this Seleção in his last few appearances. So the start or the non-start for Felix wasn't a surprise for me, but I think, you know, in terms of being lazy off the ball, I just think he's still not, and we've talked about it, he's just not comfortable 100% with this team yet.
Yeah, I think they bring us up a good point about the physicality. That's something that definitely Ukraine has, that physicality in the play, the way they play. So I can understand the rationale for leaving him off, but at the same time, when you walk away with 0 points, you can't really, you know, be too much on board and say it was the right decision, because you don't have anything to show from it.
Here's a tweet from B underscore nasty. That's a B underscore N double A double S double T triple Y. If you're scoring at home. Starting 11, I'd say, is the first problem. We saw in the second half, Sanch panicked, making two quick subs. The tactics was the tactics with always going lateral and crossing just doesn't work. Portugal needs
until it does,
of course. Portugal needs new tactics / coach with a question mark. I don't think that's the case there. Too much talent not to be winning. Pep looked his age, which you and I both agreed there. Do we want to end? I think we want to end on something not positive, but maybe something funny. Let's see if we can find something funny. Oh, here we go. Oh, look, Michael Teixeira.
That's a good guy. That's a good guy to end it on there.
Yeah, if your name is Zhuang, you may have had a bad night tonight. And I think that's true.
That's fair.
I think that's
That's a fair assessment.
The three Zhuangs did not have a great night in Ukraine. That's for sure. So, yeah, obviously the two matches coming up next month against Luxembourg, against Lithuania. Lithuania at home, second to last match there. Luxembourg finishing it off the finale, November 14th and 17th respectively. These are obviously must wins. We both feel that those will be 6 points earned for the Slesong, and that qualification will be indeed guaranteed. But how are you feeling heading into these two matches? Obviously, that things might change between now and the roster call ups next month. But what's, I guess, the lasting note here, the last kind of take for you regarding the Slesong, Nonsuch, and qualification?
Again, I still feel good about this team heading into those last two games. I mean, we talked about the stats. Outshot, outpossessed, did everything right. They just didn't walk away with the 3 points or the goal. So it seemed like everything was there. Just they couldn't get on the score sheet and get it going. And you have to give Ukraine credit there. Going up against Lithuania, we saw the last game that they played back in September. Lithuania made it a little bit difficult on them, but at the end, Portugal just had too much and overran them in the second half. And I think you saw something similar with Luxembourg, where, you know, Luxembourg fought a little bit, but towards the end, they just didn't have enough horses to keep up with Portugal. So I think you'll see very much the same type of results, in November. And we will be talking about, qualification and where their European group. We shouldn't have to worry about that playoff spot, but the one positive is, with the Nations League, you do have that backup plan just in case. If Serbia, you know, goes on a run, some type of magic happens, you still have that backup path, which is there. So no need to cause for concern just yet.
You know what? There is one more tweet I just want to share because you mentioned the playoff. This is from at Walt underscore Jabsco underscore. That's WALT underscore JABSCO underscore. It just wouldn't be Portugal if they didn't make qualifying as needlessly difficult as possible. And I think that's what we do. I think that's the one that we definitely should end on with the tweets there. So he's the Portuguese Hammer. He's Eric Vieira. Eric, I can't thank you enough for coming on and breaking down the games here. Before we let you go, just a couple of things outside of Portugal. Sir, you're on a quest, are you not?
I am on a quest.
What kind of quest?
A quest for 1K, and you've been pretty helpful with that. I'm on Twitter. I have 995 followers, and I'm trying to get to 1,000. Just kind of a personal goal, a silly goal. I'm not someone who measures their worth in followers, but it's just nice to set goals and to try to go for it. So if you're hearing the sound of my voice and you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and give me a follow on Twitter @GISHammer. And if you didn't like what you heard, follow me anyway. Why not?
Yeah, make him happy. You know, listen. As Portuguese people and fans of the Seleção, let's support each other. Obviously, Eric is a good guy. We've had him on before. We're happy to have him on again. Let's get Eric to 1,000 followers on Twitter. It's the race to 1K. Let's get the hammer 1,000 followers. You know, it'd be nice if we can get you to 1,000 before Sunday's big matchup against Minnesota.
You know what? You know, we need your help. We need your votes out there. So, yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
give us a little bit of a preview of, as I mentioned, Eric does a podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter. Does an LA Galaxy podcast. Obviously, if you're not familiar with the LA Galaxy, they are a heritage franchise in the MLS. Would that be
right? Crown jewel of the American League. Yeah.
My goodness. Okay. Well, but Eric covers a team there and does podcasts there and the MLS after being on the international break as well. They are back in action, starting with their playoffs and first round matchups galore this weekend. Sunday, right, Eric? For the
yes.
Galaxy.
Yeah, so this Sunday at 6 p.m., they travel away to Minnesota. So the Galaxy, even having, the third most active goal scorer ever, or you know, in the world right now, they still kind of backslid into the playoffs, did not get a home playoff game. So they're going to have to travel away, possible snowy conditions. But when you have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, anything could happen. And I just find it interesting, you know, the tweet mentioned earlier, you know, Portugal needs to change tactics. You know, they're going down the wings and crossing it in to, you know, number seven and just waiting for things to happen. Very similar to the critiques of the Galaxy. People are upset, you know, why is our game plan just, you know, go down the wings and cross it to Zlatan? It's because he has 30 goals and because he's 6'5", and that's what you do when you have that type of weapon at your disposal. So you know, the Galaxy are going to hope to get a win, and you know, the narrative that the league is pushing and that a lot of people in Southern California are excited about is there is another team across town called the Los Angeles Football Club, who if the Galaxy somehow manage a win in Minnesota, we will have a playoff matchup, a Los Angeles derby, if you will, El Tráfico, we will have in the playoffs, which is something that I think both fan bases are excited about. And if there's any kind of funny business in the league, which we know with FIFA, there's no funny business that ever happens, you know, that maybe there's some magic to make that happen for the next round. So Galaxy are looking to make some things happen, and hopefully when you have a player like Zlatan, anything can happen. They also have some great additions mid-season. They have an Argentine player named Christian Pavone, who's been great and a great addition. So a lot of excitement going on in Los Angeles, you know, soccer capital of the United States right now.
You know, we obviously have a lot of listeners in the States, you know, with the Portuguese populations in both the West Coast and the East Coast. Obviously, we have fans of the probably New England Revolution and NCYC, NYCFC?
NYCFC.
NYCFC, yeah. The Red Bulls. And then obviously in the West Coast, we have now, or once again, I should say, because I mean, does Chivas USA even really matter anymore? Or does that even count? Did it even happen?
Well, they're now LAFC.
Oh, wow.
And they're going to be upset that I said that. They believe that's not true, but that's the joke is when Chivas USA when Chivas USA folded, LAFC started. So, you know, there are connections to be made there, but they swear up and down that they are not Chivas USA, but they're kind of Chivas USA 2.0.
Man, you make me laugh.
Hey, I'm a homer.
I understand. No, as you should be. Obviously, the LAFC have been around, what, three seasons?
Two seasons. Their second season.
Okay, so obviously the potential playoff matchup, it would be the first time in the El Tráfico history that it would be in the playoffs, right?
It's when it counts, yeah. So LAFC has never beaten the Los Angeles Galaxy. Oh, so, you know, there's some mental games there going on as well.
Here he goes again. Jason, get him, Jason. So my question to you is this: can you be cordial to our fellow Portuguese friends from down south who have aligned with LAFC? They are LAFC since day one. Whether that means more or less to someone who has been a Galaxy man as long as you have been, but can you guys be cordial if the amazing happens that the Galaxy gets the road win at Minnesota, and then the crosstown travel to LAFC and an El Tráfico playoff match? Would it be an El Tráfico playoffico?
Ooh, yeah. Well, we're gonna have to workshop the name. Yeah, but yeah, I have shown myself to be cordial with fans of the other side. I'm an adult, you know, and at the end of the day. The reason why I support, you know, the local club is there's nothing like supporting local soccer. Obviously, we're fans. We're, you know, Portuguese. We have connections to Europe. And of course, we're going to support those European sides. But there are teams in our own backyards. And I think it's important to try to grow the game here. You know, if you talk about the Portuguese population in New England, they now have Bruce Arena, who's a great American coach with a lot of history and kind of turning around that franchise on the East Coast. So this is just my platform and my message to support your local club, whether it's, you know, LAFC or the Galaxy or San Jose. And I just mentioned two of our biggest rivals, and I'm saying go support them. And even, you know, Sacramento, Sac Republic is going to be getting a franchise as well. So, oh, yeah. So I know there's a big population up there, great fans up there, happy to see them get a franchise. So, you know, show up, go support local soccer, make your voice heard. And, you know, maybe not in our lifetimes, but maybe in our kids' lifetimes, they'll see some big, you know, some big signings and some big club atmosphere like they have in Europe. Hopefully one day our game here in the States will rival that and be on the same level.
Well, we just have to stop losing to Canada. That's what the first thing that we have to do is that.
That's again, we'll save that for the other podcast.
Well, you and Josh do a great job. Josh Gessman he's been doing it since day one, if I'm not mistaken, with the Galaxy podcast. And you guys do a great job over there, and you guys are a great listen. I will be completely honest with you. I'm a big hammer mark. All right, I like the when I get the show preview. And it's not the hammer with Josh. I go, you know what? I'll wait. I'll wait till the next one.
I appreciate that. Yeah. We'll take it.
But Josh Gessman's just done an amazing job with your podcast. And if you guys ever get a chance, check him out either on cornerofthegalaxy.com and the live stream. The studio is like second to none for a podcast. I mean, the amount of scarves. I mean, I know it's Southern California. You guys don't get winter.
The thing, we can't wear them, so you have to put them on display. But and so it becomes a nice background.
Yeah, it looks great, and it's just it's a great little venture you guys got over there. As I try not to sound demeaning, my goodness, but
no, it's great. Yeah, we have a live show on Thursday nights, and that's always a lot of fun. You know, people get in the chat room and have a lot of fun. You know, it's you know, growing the game and supporting the fan base. And there's not a lot of us, but the ones that are there, we really support each other and get after it and really have love for the game and love for our club.
Well, I'd be remiss, sir, if I didn't give you a chance to not only plug all your social medias one more time, but obviously on the cornerofthegalaxy.com, you do have a shop. And not only do you have a shop, but you have like some personal like...
I have my own merchandise.
Yeah, some personal merch. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, a running joke over on the show is, you know, everyone kind of has a nickname. So Josh is Pato because, you know, Brazilian Pato has been rumored to come to the Galaxy for about, you know, 10 years now. So he says, I don't want to hear anything about Pato. So that ended up being his nickname.
Did you hear that he's signing with Sacramento?
I wouldn't surprise me. He's always in the conversation. And then obviously with my nickname, the Portuguese Hammer, you know, there being a need or an ask for some merchandise. So we created some stickers and I kind of have a ridiculous cartoon logo of a hammer holding a Portuguese flag. And for some reason, people are buying it and enjoying it. So, so head on down to cornerofthegalaxy.com/shop. They're out of stock right now, but we got a fresh
look
order,
at this guy
coming in. So, you know, stay tuned with the shop and we could definitely put the link out there. Even if you're not a Galaxy fan and, you know, our friends who support LAFC across the way, they like the sticker because it doesn't necessarily scream LA Galaxy.
Because it's not an LA Galaxy sticker. Yeah. Per se,
yeah, I mean,
it does have the show website on it, but
yeah,
I mean there's no kit. It's just a hammer and a flag.
And so, if you're Portuguese, you can sport that proudly without necessarily, you know, making it known to the world that you support Major League Soccer if that's not your thing.
Well, I sport it proudly on my thermoflask or whatever
hydroflask.
The hydroflask. Thank you.
Like Mother Time.
Yeah, Mother. Mother Time indeed. Yes, but if someone wants to buy one of those, obviously you know cornerofthegalaxy.com/shop. What they're like what? They're $5, $10, $15. I mean, they got to be.
They're a dollar. We're practically giving them away. This is this is a great infomercial. I appreciate the setup. You're a true pro, Dan.
As soon as I saw them, I'm like, God, that's such a cool sticker. I'm definitely getting some. And I got one on my Hydro Flask, and my oldest son Eli's got one in his room.
That's so cool.
If Lucas plays his cards right, he might get one from Pi as well. So, Eric, I can't thank you enough, buddy. I know we went a little over here, but it was a nice free flowing conversation, and that's what kind of for me makes the best shows. But really appreciate you coming on. Remember to follow Eric on Twitter at @GISHammer, at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter to follow his podcast there. Galaxy Profile on Instagram. Again, Eric he should already be at 1K. He should probably be at 1.2K if I may be so bold. But he just it's an entertaining account. Both on Twitter and on Instagram. Eric's a very entertaining guy, very knowledgeable guy, and really appreciate the time he made today for us on episode number 24. And he's so famous, guys. He's so famous. Again, and I don't know how guy who under a 1,000 followers on Twitter, but he's so famous that someone rang his doorbell. He answered the door, and the quote was exactly what, Eric?
Yes. Hey, it's the Hammer.
Real quick, can you tell us that story?
Yeah, I didn't know if we'd have time to bring this one up.
I've got all the time in the world, buddy.
I'm going to tell everyone I have a chance. So essentially, Amazon, I have Amazon Prime, so I order quite a bit. So Amazon delivery guy rings the doorbell. I go to grab the package, and he turns around and recognizes me because we do live stream. Our Corner of the Galaxy podcast, said, "Hey, are you the Hammer?" And so, you know, we had a little bit of chit chat, and I turned around to my daughter, and she looked at me and she said, "Really? Really? He knows you?" So, you know, like I said, there's not a lot of us. I'm under 1,000 followers, but the people who follow the Los Angeles Galaxy and who are all in on the club, I'm known in those circles. So I'm a big fish in a small pond in that regard. But most importantly, the Ring security camera caught it all. So no one is going to think I'm lying. You know, my wife rolled her eyes. My daughter gave me the really. So, you know, no one appreciates my newfound fame here around the house, but it's a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun, being involved with the soccer community here in Southern California.
Awesome, buddy. And if that's not an endorsement for the Ring security cam, let's go ahead and make that I'm going to go ahead and send this tape over to the folks at Ring. Maybe we can get an endorsement deal here on this list on podcast. Eric, again, can't thank you enough, man. I appreciate your time and Forza as always, buddy. And, in what, 2022, We'll start thinking about these road trips up and down I-5 for these MLS barn burners. And what do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun time. You know, nothing like away travel and visiting some new stadiums and what they have planned in Sacramento. I'll definitely be visiting soon. So, I also just want to take the time to thank you for all the content you put out and the hard work you do for the show. So it's always appreciated on the listener perspective as well.
I appreciate that, buddy. Have a good night, and we'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
My thanks once again to Eric, the Portuguese Hammer Vieira. Remember to follow him on Twitter at GIS Hammer. Check out his LA Galaxy podcast at Galaxy Podcast that he is a part of with Josh Guessman there. Galaxy Profile on Instagram. That's GALAXYPROFOUL on Instagram, and of course head over to cornerofthegalaxy.com/shop. Pick yourself up a Portuguese Hammer sticker. Folks, they're only a dollar. I mean, you know what? Get a little crazy. The holidays are coming. Why don't you splurge? Maybe get like 3 or 4. You know, change back on a 5. You know what I mean? But get yourself a Portuguese Hammer sticker and get Eric to 1K. I really want to get him to 1K, the race to 1K for Eric the Portuguese Hammer Vieira. Let's get a good guy. Let's give a good guy what he asked for, which is 5 more followers, folks, to get him to 1K. That will do it for episode number 24 of the Slesson Podcast. Again, so many ways that you can support the show, and thank you all for supporting the show and listening to the show. Again, go to SlessonPod.com, Facebook.com/SlessonPod, at SlessonPod on Twitter and on Instagram, and SlessonPod@gmail.com. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, please subscribe. Any platform that you listen to your podcast to, if you have any kind of rating system, any kind of review, give us a 5-star rating, give us a solid review. It helps the show out tremendously to get to more and more people throughout podcast land, throughout the world. So my thanks to all of you who have already done it and who continue to do it each and every time I ask. I know I ask a lot. I know I ask every episode, but it really means a lot if you guys can do that. And for those who have, as I mentioned, un gran obrigado. My name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of the Slesson Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. And as always,
Forza Portugal!